Okay, that brings us to agenda item six. This is discussion, possible action on report from technical consultant 6.1, regional planning updates. Tony has several updates he's going to give us. So Tony, the floor is yours.
In 14 minutes. All right. So, and we've been so focused on so many different subjects in the last several meetings, and now we're starting to dial in on the initially prepared plan, the IPP, that's due next March of 25. And here we are already at the end of March of 24, and we just got started. I thought I'd touch upon at least where we are in terms of our budget, which we're nearly halfway through our initial allocation, but we have additional funds. We just haven't executed the amendment yet. That's on me. I need to coordinate with Pam, but frankly, we've been so focused on amendments and technical memorandum and whatnot. We've been doing the work. We need to pull back and update the amendment and the budget. So we're doing fine on budget is my message to you. We're not even halfway through the first allocation, but boy, are we putting in time and energy. Particularly this year is one of those heavy lift years to get to that initially prepared plan. And in doing so, we're not looking for action from the planning group today, not formal action, but we are getting draft versions of the chapters. It was in your packet, chapter one, and it's supporting documentation that's going to be in the appendix out to the planning group members with the intent process-wise is that we're not looking for action from you today. Rather than you getting a lot of material right before the initially prepared plan, let's dole it out over the course of a year. We're in small digestive clumps so that you might review it, you know, both for editorial and for content, for subject matter, that you can look at it with recognition. You know, we've tracked changes. So when you look in your packet and you see the draft chapter one, it's on, or it's going to be, I'm not sure if it's already on there yet, but it's going to be on the regional planning website. It is, it's on the Brazos GE website so that you can look at it. You can see our own personal, my personal take at least on getting this information to you is that you can see the track changes to see specifically where we're updating information and what, at least in terms of the text. It gets awful noisy with the data and the tables and the figures. Those tables and figures are updated. Many of the ones in Chapter 1, which is the description of the planning area, will be updated more over the next year as additional new information arises. Where there's available information, we've updated it, but recognizing that the IPP is going to be out March of next year and the final plan is going to be in October of 25, some of this information we might want to update again. So right now it might have 2022. We might have 2023 data in there in the future. But you as the planning group members have a shot to look at this chapter one, identify if there's issues or concerns or things that you want it to have raised in the description of the planning area, and provide those to the consultant team, and we can go and start making those revisions such that when we get to the IPP, we can say, look, you've already seen this a year ago, and here's where we've updated based on your feedback. And so that's the idea, and we're going to be doing that over the course of this year with other chapters as we're going forward. So this is just your first bite at chapter one, essentially, which is the description of the planning area. There are 14 sections in that chapter. I will not read through this list here. I'll go through them and kind of just generally describe what's in chapter one and solicit some feedback. We are looking for feedback from the planning group, either today or in an email later or a phone call, whatever's convenient for you guys. But this description of the area, what we try and do is capture, you know, of course, the boundaries of the area, the characteristics of the area. We have the list of the voting and non-voting members. Again, if that changes, we'll update that before the IPP. But we provide just a large-scale picture of the Brazos GE region. We discuss population. There's a section on population, both looking at historical and projections. So, you, again, as we adopted numbers and information last year, those have been incorporated into these graphics to kind of show both at the entire regional level, that growth, boy, that's a, it got our attention, got the planning group's attention last year, and it will continue to. And there's parts of the region that are going to grow faster than even what that has on there. But it also breaks it down by those sub-regional categories that the planning group has used historically, namely the Rolling Plains region to the northwest, the I-35 corridor, and then the lower basin. And you can see how that growth, both historical and projected, is shown. We have a list of the major cities in the region, as well as the distributions of population 2030 and 2080 by county. We have a section on economic activities. Right now, as far as this summary goes, majority of this is the latest information that we have from 2016, but there's another one due out towards the end of this year that will probably update a lot of this, particularly total employed. But we pull together this economic information as a snapshot to just give a picture of what's going on in the region. And it's also broken down by those three sub-regional categories and a regional total. There's a section on climate and the climatology of the region, both in terms of temperature and precipitation, what kind of interests us when it comes to water management and management of water supplies. This graphic shows the average annual precipitation over the 41-year time period up through 2022. And again, breaking down, okay, what's happening where within the region. We have a discussion on water sources. So this chapter, again being chapter one, flies at a high level. It's the introducing the reader for somebody that's just trying to get familiar with Region G. We have an extensive chapter three on source water availability and supplies that gets into the minutia of the WAMs and on the groundwater side, the aquifers themselves, whatnot. This is really flying at a high level for somebody who just wants a big picture view. The table on the left is just a depiction of the major aquifers. We've talked about this before. On the right is an excerpt of the table of all the reservoirs greater that have an authorized capacity greater than 10,000 acre feet. And again, there are more than what's shown here. The intent was just to kind of give you an idea of the information that we're providing in chapter one. But if you look in your packet, we have all the reservoirs that meet that threshold listed there. And it's just a general discussion on groundwater and surface water and availability and how we look at it and characterize it. We also present information for both the wholesale and the major water providers. Those lists were adopted at our last meeting. Wasn't going to subject you to go through them all again, but we compile that information in chapter one, and we have discussions on what contracts, what availability and sources and agreements are in place. As I've said before, definitely that information relating to the wholesale major water providers will continue to be updated over the next year. As I've said before, when we start identifying needs and start having conversations on needs, suddenly there will be wholesalers that'll go, hey, let's dial in and look at this a little closer. And so we'll be updating that information without a doubt. We have a section on current water use and demand centers in terms of total water use by county. We have both a discussion on consumptive uses. So that's our various categories of municipal, agricultural, industrial, those various uses, and a discussion on non-consumptive uses, whether it's flows for the natural environment and what type of flows are identified there in water quality. Speaking of natural resources, the section on natural resources, there's a lot that's covered within there. Again, descriptive in nature. So you've got vegetation, geology of the region, the soil composition and makeup in what is a very large region. So it's a very large discussion. Wetlands and water, wildlife, and agricultural resources. We have discussions on each one of those. These are just two of the graphics that I thought were interesting regarding vegetational area and biotic provinces. I know that Tiffany's staring at that real hard right now, but Point being that she's looking at it, better be right. My point is that we have graphics and tables on each of these subjects that are just kind of characterizing the region in chapter one. That's the idea. We also have a discussion on threats and constraints to water supply. Now, much of this information is gleaned from the previous plan. It doesn't mean that because I'm conveying it for this plan that this body, if there are other threats or constraints besides those listed here, and I'll touch upon them here momentarily, but if there are those that are important to you that you see that aren't on there that you think, hey, the regional planning group, maybe in chapter one, we want to identify some of those others. This is where, you know, over the course of the next 6 months, but since we're showing you chapter one now, either today or in follow-up conversations, please let us know and we can track changes and add to chapter one or take away, but to make sure that we're reflecting the planning group's views as of 2026 in chapter one. But those threats and constraints include, of course, the projected population growth. I think we've already covered population for a good year that everybody has discussed about how population is so much going to affect Region G. And we have a discussion of that in Chapter 1. High chlorides in the upper basin, zebra mussels and their effect on water supply. Susceptibility to drought. Boy, that's a big one, obviously, both groundwater and surface water. Identified water quality problems. There's a large updated section in there. We use the latest, I think it's the 2022 Clean Rivers Plan Basin Summary Report. It's not a comprehensive recreation of that report, but we went through and tried to at least grab that information to give characteristics on water quality concerns in the region and fly at a pretty high level in chapter one to discuss that. There's a later chapter in the report that we can delve in more detail on water quality. So it's kind of a balancing act of wanting to have updated information, wanted to have some summary, and certainly to speak to water quality because it's just as important as quantity.
Tony, hold on just a second. Gary Westbrook has a question.
Just a really, really quick question or a thought. I see a lot of information there related to surface water, and rightfully so. You might also consider some brief discussion of impacts to water levels in aquifer affecting their availability as well.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And we can do that. We have threats to agricultural resources in terms of drought, water quality, and their potential impacts, threats to natural resources, whether it be lower stream flows, impacts from water quality to natural resources, lower reservoir levels, and reduced freshwater inflows to the coast, and also threats to biological resources, increased chlorides, bacteria, DO, increased nutrients, algae problems, pesticides and heavy metals. Those are, you can have day-long discussions on each one of these items, and people are and are doing so. We're just trying to capture at a high level the ones of a general nature for the Brazos region. And so, again, with all of you folks that have your individual, you know, it's a big region, and each one of you represent a different portion of it. If there are threats and constraints to water supply that aren't captured in this high-level summary that should be captured in a high-level summary, again, there's much more detail later in the report, but if it's something that meets that threshold to you, by all means, let us, the technical consultants, know. We can track those changes, and when we come forward with the IPP and I'm summarizing chapter one, then I can hit just upon those changes, and we're not going through the entire chapter in a year's time. We'll touch upon those key elements that we're modifying. There's a section on drought preparation. It alludes to chapter seven. And the focus of the plan on the drought of record, characterizing current drought preparations.
Hey, yes. Tony, when do you want the suggestions for additional items?
Really, anytime before the IPP is fine. I would suggest that, given that we're giving you chapter one now and other chapters are coming, that it would be better for the if there's comments to come to do it here in the near term. Because once we start rolling out chapter two, chapter three, and so on, that your attention is going to be well, while your attention's on a million other things, but for regional planning, your attention's going to be on those next chapters. It'd probably be better to do it sooner rather than later. But the window's open all the way up through and even past the IPP, to be fair. As far as draft preparations go, it talks about Chapter 7 having recommendations for additional regional-level drought response planning tools. It mentions drought contingency planning and the drought contingency plans that are offered up. They're required by the state for wholesale water providers, irrigation districts. It's informational, talking about the drought contingency plans, what they are, why they're required. Also, water conservation plans, why they're required, who they're required for, that they're commonly included in management plans for GCDs and underground WCDs.
Tony,
yes, sir.
Dirk Aaron's got a question.
Yes, sir.
Tony, I guess I'm curious about our access to those drought contingency plans from our perspective. Is there a link to those that we can review all of them? Because there's some that are, they were supposed to have been, but there's some that are just non-existent.
Eventually there will be. This is Chapter 1, where we're kind of talking at a high level about drought contingency plans. And Chapter 7 will absolutely, we are collecting, PAM receives water conservation plans, drought contingency plans. We're aggregating all of those together. As part of Chapter 7, our team will be summarizing and reviewing all the metrics in those plans as part of our Chapter 7 work. It'll include a link where we can look at the plans that we've received to date, and we'll also include links for draft water conservation plans, things of that nature when we get to Chapter 7. That's where we really get in those details.
Is there a date that they had to have brought those up to speed? I know a few years ago everybody redid them. Are they okay with?
It's May 1st. We're supposed to have them turned into the Texas Water Development Board. But I thought, I know from ours, that we also sent it to the regional planning group, yes. And I thought we were required to do that as well.
I think they are.
Yes.
What we actually do is another conversation to be had, but we certainly receive drought contingency plans and water conservation plans, and I know that's part of the requirements. How much that we get all of them is probably a different discussion, but we compile what we can. We reach it. You know, part of our efforts in Chapter 7 is going to be reaching out to folks. Again, a lot of that outreach, and we're going to be compiling that information. So the detail you're looking for will definitely be in Chapter 7.
Was that your question, Lisa? Your comment? Okay. Okay.
So our Chapter 1 here, because of the importance of drought preparations, we have this high-level discussion in Chapter 1. And it, of course, references Chapter 7, saying, for more detail, look in Chapter 7. But I'm just giving you a taste of, we have this in Chapter 1 that kind of discusses it at a very five-mile high level. And talks about the examples that the plan will provide in terms of water conservation and drought management plans. There's a section on existing programs and goals. It discusses groundwater regulation, whether it's describes the priority groundwater management areas, groundwater conservation districts, groundwater management areas, provides all the information on those various subjects, discusses the Clean Rivers Act, the Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, largely those big programs and goals that are in place that affect water providers and users throughout the region. There's probably many more that we could touch upon, but these are the big ones. The state WAM initiatives with the water availability models on the groundwater side, the groundwater availability models, it's more just factual in nature. There's not opinion there so much as it is. It's just letting the reader, informing the reader. And then there's a section on previous water supply planning in the Brazos G area. This is one that I do want to wave the flag at the planning group members and say that there are many studies that have gone on, even in the last 5 years. If there are those studies that you think kind of are at that bar of this is of regional significance, these are characteristic of our region. Waco provided me a draft of their integrated water supply plan. I just got that the other day. There might be others that are, hey, you know, I know Georgetown's got one, Round Rock. But there's other studies that are going on, and if they meet that threshold, please reach out to us and let us know. I certainly develop a list, but if there are ones that are of significance to the planning group, and this is your report, that I want to try and reflect your opinions of what some of those big, high-profile water supply planning studies are. We've got those that have been identified over the last 20-some-odd years, but maybe there's some that have been done in the last five that warrant that attention. And so I'm asking the planning group members to let me know, and I will track and include that information. I can summarize it, but just need to let me know, hey, these are the ones that warrant some attention, and we will include that. That'll be the kind of thing we'll summarize before the IPP, say, hey, we've added these. So I'm waving that flag to you there. And then finally, in chapter one, there's a summary of water loss audits in the region. This information here, this table's from 2022. We might have 2023 data available by March of next year, so this might be one of those that we update, but at least it's been updated to 2022. What I thought was interesting is that compared to the previous plan, I think double the number, and I'm going off memory here, I didn't write this in my notes, but I believe it's almost twice as many public water suppliers submitted a water loss audit to the board in 2022 than the reporting that was in the previous plan. I think it was 45 or 55. And so it stood out, it just leapt out that 109 did just in 2022, which I think is really good as far as when we're looking at strategies for water, managing what we have is certainly a important discussion throughout the plan. And this is the initial laying out of the characterization of water losses in the region. You look at that average water loss over there on the bottom right, and we're, you know, that's between real losses, which is like you're actually physically losing the water from leaks or whatnot, and apparent losses where you're, you know, that's more in the accounting side of things, but, you know, whether it's meter uncertainty, things like that, or theft. But between the two, the average is in 2022 is about 24%. Well, I mean, you think a 24% use in the region, that's a significant number. And so everything that the planning group can do to encourage the reduction of water loss where feasible, those words are right out of chapter one and are going to be right out of many other chapters, is, hey, let's manage what we've got as well as we can. That's a hard problem that every public water supply system deals with and wrestles with, but it's something that the planning group can support throughout the planning document, and does so here in chapter one right off the bat. That's where it ends, is right on those statements. So that kind of, I'll pause here just to ask if there's, that was at a high level, kind of going through the sections of chapter one. It is a high level characterization of the region. And as Lisa asked, we'd love your comments sooner rather than later before we get on to the other chapters. But if you need time, and you're not being held right now to say, ask the question now, forever hold your peace. You can go back and look. But if there are any questions now, certainly here to answer them, or we can discuss offline. But I wanted to pause here.
So David Blackburn has a question.
Yes. This, back on the economic activity slide.
Yes, sir.
It says 2016 data.
Yes, sir.
You'll use more current data?
We are definitely going to use more current data. The next bout of information, that the source that was used last time, we're looking at that source, is supposed to be out in several months. So I anticipate that we will update that before the IPP.
Are you constrained on the sources? I mean, are you limited to the U.S. Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Stats?
The planning group is not constrained. If there are other sources that would be preferable that the planning group would rather utilize than these sources, we'd be glad to look into those and pull the information together from another source.
And my last question is along those lines. I mean, the State Comptroller's Office issues economic reports and data. And did these numbers include anything relating to Fort Hood or Fort Cavazos?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that last bit.
Did these numbers contain anything relating to Fort Cavazos? I would say they don't.
Yeah.
The State Comptroller does a report for every legislative session on the economic impact of Fort Cavazos. And the most recent one, released in August of this past year, estimated a $28 billion impact on the state and on the region for Fort Cavazos. I just sent a note, I'll try to get it to you, but asking for the payroll that is associated with Fort Cavazos, with the contractors that are there along with the active duty personnel. But at any rate, just my line of questioning or query is just maybe include some state statistics in it, and if Fort Cavazos, the economic impact and activity associated with that.
Gotcha. Yes, sir.
Which will be substantial.
And we can do that, and we'll be updating this as well. And I will tell you guys, just because that spurs a thought I meant to say, is that, you know, as the new consultant, we didn't want to come riding in and just rewrite everything and say, this is the way we do it. And so we tried to use the same sources, present the information in a similar way, so that when you see where there is a change, that it's a substitute change because of updated information or things of that nature. It's not just us changing things for change's sake. So just that's why we've stuck to some of the same sources before, but it doesn't mean we can't vary at your discretion. Yes, sir.
Kenny Weldon has
just a quick comment, and I'll provide this in writing later. And Judge, thanks for bringing that up. I think when you look at this, what's the purpose of providing this? It understates economic impact because it just talks about payroll. And we're a region that has a significant agricultural impact that needs to be conveyed somehow. And so I would suggest we maybe look at how to convey overall economics from a more than just payroll, but I'll provide a comment on that.
And that's a good comment, and I agree. And Judge Blackburn's comment, I don't know what other resources are out there, but I am open to seeing what's out there that has this. But there also is going to be a section that the Texas Water Development Board does that's called the socioeconomic impact, which shows the impact on the region. It's in a different section that, like Tony said, this is kind of at a higher view that shows comes from the Texas Water Development Board, the social impact of not addressing the water shortages and issues within our region specifically. And that's there will be some of those things also in there. We just hadn't seen them yet. So, correct, Tony?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I appreciate David's concern there, Mike. If you get an update and it's 2021, you know, because this was 2016, mm-hmm. that when the 22 plan, by the time we're putting anything out, any information from 2021 is already well out of date. So if there's other sources,
My point bringing up, well, 2 points, but for Fort Cavazos is just, and I 100% agree with the comment, which is kind of what I was driving at in a general sense, but I don't think that chart either in terms of time or in approach really identifies the level of economic activity occurring.
Well, I think it's short region. Yes,
and so, again, State Comptroller's Office has a wealth of data information on economic activity other than just payroll. And that's why I asked if we were limited to those sources. And if we're not
limited,
I would,
at all.
Yeah. See, and I don't know where does like healthcare fit in economic activity, for example. I mean, it may be one of those services. It may be in services up there in terms of that payroll line item. But I don't know. I just, again, if we're trying to gauge overall level of activity and tie that ultimately to water usage and water resource management, that's a very limiting chart and approach.
Gary Westbrook.
Tony, when we're looking at drought contingency plans, and somewhere there's a break on size of producer or provider. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is the smaller public water supply systems are not required to file. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Do we have a way to account for that, or is it a small enough number that it's not
they have the threshold, but I don't know what the magnitude is of the number of entities that are underneath that threshold because they don't report.
Right. And that's kind of what I was wondering is if we had a way to understand whether or not that was a large enough number use-wise to impact the plan or not. And I'm just not sure that I know where to look for that information.
No, but I can follow up with the board because that's an interesting question. At some point, they drew a threshold, right?
And yes, sir. Okay.
That would be somehow they determined what that threshold was.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Tony? So those were some good comments and suggestions, and that's exactly what Tony is looking for. That's why we rolled out the draft chapter. And Pam, it is the draft. Is this on the website already? Yeah, so the more detailed is will be, but there will be changes. We know changes and possibly other changes from the recommendations. And if y'all see anything in the future or come up with anything, just please let Tony know.
That's right. I mean, I will champion to the end of the planning process that it's your plan. So I started by sticking with what your plan was 5 years ago, but different people sitting around the table, that thing's going to grow and change. And information like what you guys are identifying for, let's flesh out some of the economic detail. Let's capture groundwater in more detail. That's the kind of stuff we're definitely looking for to tailor it.
Okay. Okay, go ahead with the...
All right, well, I just have a few more items here. As far as other things that are going on, John mentioned in his presentation, our tech memo was declared administratively complete. We submitted it on time, and they declared it administratively complete on March 11th. If there's informal comments we get with them, we'll work with them to flesh out the details. There are two entities. I won't say that the process is formally going because we're still looking for information, but there are two entities that potentially we're either looking at a consistency waiver request. If you guys were here last year, you know, we've done some consistency waiver requests before. If you recall, a consistency waiver request is something that's submitted to the Water Development Board. There, the board is the one that gets the request. The planning group has an opportunity to weigh in on whether or not it supports the consistency waiver request. And as part of that, the one thing that is asked of the planning group, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's to consider water availability. And so the city of Benjamin has requested to be placed on the planning group's agenda for possible support of a consistency waiver request for groundwater from the Seymour Aquifer in Knox County. I will very briefly summarize here that they have wells that exist today too that are in Knox County, in the Seymour Aquifer. They are not looking to increase water. They're looking for some funding support from the Water Development Board relating to groundwater storage, I believe, John. And the problem is that the 21 plan says their wells are in the Blaine Aquifer. And so there's a discrepancy there between the real world and what's in the plan. And so they're looking for a consistency waiver request. And so we're going to talk with the Water Development Board, talk with the city of Benjamin, get some information on exactly what they're doing. I'll present a more thorough breakdown in our next meeting when they'll be on the agenda. But assuming that they're going to want to be still on the agenda and assuming that we'll go through with the process. So I'm just giving you a heads up that's coming. Also, the city of Georgetown has expressed interest in a potential amendment request for a water project, but I don't have a lot of detail on that at this point. We're still in the information gathering stage, but it would have been wonderful to combine all this into one amendment, but because of the timing, that's can't be the case. We're literally already in the throes of the process with the public hearing today of having the deadline of June 4th. If there is indeed an amendment to be sought, either with Benjamin or with Georgetown, Benjamin's just asking for a consistency waiver request. That all of that remains to be seen. I'm just giving the planning group a heads up that these two items, we might have yet another amendment down, but whether it's minor or major, I cannot say yet. And then I'm going to follow up with the first thing you heard from John, which is about the rural outreach.
the board provided information on rural water providers, of course, with the emphasis being on engagement with rural water providers this round. There's a required section of Chapter 10 to discuss engagement with rural water providers. Your message from the moment that you brought us on as the technical consultant was engagement, engagement, engagement. I can tell you there's 205 WUGs that are identified in there. We've already been engaging and reaching out to all of them over the course of the planning process. We will document that in Chapter 10, and we're going to continue engaging them, whether they're rural or not. We're engaging everybody, because that was your message to us. And so, boy, we are. And that's where a lot of our effort is. But it's required. It's in the Texas Water Code that we have an explicit section in Chapter 10 that's going to speak to that. So we're going to highlight it. Doesn't mean that others that aren't on that list are not important. It's just we're required now to identify that list of rural water providers, and we engage them. We're engaging with everybody. I'll also say that the Drought Preparedness Council submitted a letter to the planning group for the planning group's consideration, offering their assistance. Chapter 31, Section 357.42H of the Texas Administrative Code requires the regional planning groups to consider any relevant recommendations from the Drought Preparedness Council. It's just a snapshot of the front page of their letter, but the meat. And the meat of the letter were these three recommendations. I'm going to read them to you because they're straight from the council. One is that the regional water plans and state water plans shall serve as water supply plans under drought of record conditions. The Drought Preparedness Council encourages regional water planning groups to consider planning for drought conditions worse than the drought of record, including scenarios that reflect greater rainfall deficits and or higher surface temperatures. The second recommendations that the Drought Preparedness Council offers encourages regional water planning groups to incorporate projected future reservoir evaporation rates in their assessments of future surface water availability. And then the third recommendation from the council encourages the regional water planning groups to identify in their plans those utilities within their boundaries that reported having less than 180 days of available water supply to the TCEQ during the current or preceding planning cycle. For systems that appeared on that 180-day list, the planning groups should perform the evaluation required by the Administrative Code 357.42G if it has not already been completed for that system. And so the TCEQ maintains a list of those entities that have been on that 180-day list, and we have the capability to evaluate that, and we'll be evaluating that as part of the process. As far as our path forward over the next, you know, I've already said the IPPs are coming. What are we doing? This is just a high level characterization of we're going to be working over the next 30 days, working with the Water Development Board to finalize and incorporate any public comments that might be submitted. We didn't hear any today, but there might be written comments. We're going to incorporate that. We're going to be performing our, now looking forward at the 26 plan. We're going to be looking at the water management strategies and starting those evaluations. Somebody came up to me before the meeting saying, hey, is now the time that we need to start bringing projects for consideration? I would say yes. We're now moving into that phase. We'll get the, we're coordinating with BRA and going to submit the request for a notice to proceed. And once we get that notice to proceed from the Water Development Board, we'll be off to the races looking at needs and strategies. The consistency waiver requests, the other amendment, we're going to be working with those entities to gather sufficient information to present to you guys at our next meeting, hopefully. And then I'd also offer up that as we're approaching that March deadline for the IPP, that we're going to be venturing into the realms of policy, and of course those water management strategies. And you have a policy subcommittee and the scope of work committee, and it would probably be wise to start. We don't need to, I wouldn't submit that you have to identify the date today, but it'd probably be wise for the planning group to start considering, hey, as this work's starting to pop up over the next several months, we probably need to start thinking about pulling those committees together to start thinking about, hey, what are we going to put in Chapter 8 policy recommendations? And as the technical consultants start evaluating projects and pulling information on projects, that scope of work committee probably needs to start thinking about, hey, we're going to be reviewing and recommending strategies and strategy projects. It'd be good to start contemplating when and where for those committees and their activities. And with that, I don't think I hit 14 minutes. I apologize, but it wasn't 4 hours. You're welcome.
You were just a little over. any questions for Tony before I let him sit down? You have a question?
Dirt? I okay. just admire the fact that he did that.
And it's the extra time is because we ask questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Tony.